This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. Listen to us on KPFK, KPFA, and other Pacifica affiliates, and watch us on Free Speech TV Monday through Friday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. Just days before the general election, a new feature film by director Jeff Nichols focused on a somewhat forgotten moment in American history that seems more relevant now than ever before. Loving, named for Richard and Mildred Loving, is the story of a rural Virginia couple who wanted to be allowed to marry legally. Richard, a white man, married Mildred, a black woman, but because of so-called anti-miscegenation laws in Virginia and other states, their marriage was not recognized and the couple were arrested multiple times. But the civil rights movement came into full force at the same time, and a lawsuit led by the ACLU on the Lovings case went all the way to the Supreme Court, which eventually struck down all anti-miscegenation laws as unconstitutional. The film Loving is still in theaters nationwide, and our pop culture correspondent and film critic Stephanie Abraham now joins us to discuss it. Stephanie Abraham is a writer and media critic, and she helped to found the feminist magazine Makeshift. She was the founding editor of the magazine Loudmouth. Her works have been published in McSweeney's, Al Jazeera, Mizna, and Bitch magazine. Welcome to the program, Stephanie.
Thanks, Sonali. It's so good to be here.
So while the film came out before the election, it was in a way tied to the election too. There was a social media campaign called hashtag Vote Loving, where the film promoters were trying to bring up this idea that it was indeed not too long ago when just marrying a person outside of your race was illegal. And of course, issues of race are very much at the forefront today during this election. What was your overall impression of the film, both artistically and the political point that it tries to bring forward?
Good question. So Jeff Nichols directed this film, and he's known for kind of showing emotion rather than expressing it through words. And I feel like that is really the essence of this film. So it's really... it's crazy that their last name is Loving. Okay, it's almost like, was this their destiny? And so they never actually say "I love you" to each other, but the filmmaker really wanted to show the love between them. Just so there's lots of close-ups. There's lots of ways that you see them just staring at each other. And you know, for me, it actually drove me a little crazy because I am the type of person who likes more movement and more dialogue. But, you know, the more I read about this couple, the more I learned that actually Richard Loving was a man, he was very tight-lipped. He was a man of very few words. And so the filmmaker really kind of honored that. And so artistically...
Right, the original couple, I mean, these are real people the film was based on. And as I mentioned, they were from rural Virginia, very, very poor, right? Extremely poor people, not politically inclined. And I think very sort of unexpected heroes, didn't expect that they would be leading this fight that would in the end benefit all Americans, right?
That's exactly right. And a lot of critics are talking about that, just how normal they are, kind of average folks, you know, they're country bumpkins. They end up moving to DC because once they're married and living together and she's pregnant and the local police find out, they're not having it. And so they're arrested and they're given 1 year prison time, or they can leave Virginia for 25 years. So they're basically banished. And if they want to come back to the state, they can not do so together. And so they go to DC and they try to make it work. And they're just so kind of, they feel like encroached upon, you know. So going back to this idea of the artisticness of the film, when they're in Virginia, it's all very open. You see lush fields. There's close-ups of flowers. There's lots of like nature and beauty, and lots of close-ups of them throughout the film.
That's their home, so they feel most comfortable in that environment, I think, right?
That's right. And then when they're in DC, it's all very closed. The light is different. You know, they show like you know, trash, like a dog eating out of the trash, things that you never saw in Virginia. So you really kind of feel the tension that they experience once they left their home. And so they go back because his mom is a midwife, and this explains the simplicity of it. Okay, she's actually very sad. She's getting depressed. She doesn't say anything until she says, "I always dreamed that your mother would be the midwife, you know, for the baby." And he's quiet for a second, and then he says, "Okay." And that's it. And then that night they pack up and they go back, and then ensues the thing. So it's very, very, this film is very, very subtle. Even, for example, his mom, as she's delivering the baby, she had never said anything when they got married. But then she just comes out to pour the water out from the birth, and she says, "You know, you never should have married that girl." And so it's all very subtle, but very impactful at the same time. And addressing this question of what it means today, I think, you know, even a month ago, we could have kidded ourselves to think like, "Oh, look at our past. Can you believe that happened?" And now I think we can actually read this as a mirror and a very scary future of is this our present day, you know,
right.
And not only for LGBTQ folks, but also thinking about race. And so, you know, as every day we get more headlines, the next white supremacist who's been elected to the cabinet. But I have a friend who's a professor at a liberal arts college in Virginia. And 2 days after the election, the students reported that the athletic field was covered with cotton. So, you know, I'd like to think that, oh, look at this is like a gentle, they're describing it as a gentle picture of our past. But in fact, like, no, I think it's a harsh reality of today.
Right. I want to play for our audience a clip from the film Loving that we're discussing. In this clip, Mildred Loving, the black woman who she and her husband face arrest, have been arrested for simply being married to one another. They've had to leave their homes, and they're watching this non-political couple, the wife rather, is watching the civil rights marches playing out on her TV screen.
Washington, D.C. has started, and it's about half of the 100,000 estimated crowd headed off down Constitution Avenue, headed towards the Lincoln Memorial, which is where we're seated now. It is here that the climax of the march.
You boys stop that wrestling.
Right now, you can see.
Come and help Miss Laura with her groceries.
Coming in around the plaza surrounding Lincoln Memorial. We want first to go.
They say over 100,000 people there.
Standing by along the parade route at
17th
and
Constitution.
Can you imagine?
Might as well be halfway around the world.
At this particular spot, we had expected the marchers to just
now
begin. However, some 15 minutes ago, the march got underway.
You know what you need to do?
What?
Particularly among the young people, you need to write Bobby Kennedy. I'm serious. That's what they're up there for. All this talk of civil rights. You need to get you some civil rights.
Engaged in demonstrations before. In the background, you can hear some of the young people shouting.
And that's a clip from the film Loving by director Jeff Nichols, and stars a couple of non-American actors, actually. Both the main characters, Richard and Mildred Loving, are played by non-Americans. My guest, Stephanie Abraham, is with us. She's the pop culture correspondent and film critic for Rising Up with Sonali. In terms of the way in which the politics are drawn into the film, I thought that was also important, that it didn't overshadow the ultimate point of the film, which is that this is a love story. And you can say and do and talk to the end of the earth about politics, but in the end, there are two people who love one another, and all they want to do is to be allowed to love one another.
They do. And I think this film is a really good example of what institutional racism looks like. So some people say, what does that mean? But it means literally tearing families apart from each other. And so you can see from the extended family, because she lived with her family and he lived literally right across this with his. And then when after they got married, he moved in with her family. And so, I mean, they had plans to build their own home a half a mile away. And so you have this extended rich family network. And then because of this institutional racism that came down from the laws, from the police and from the court, they had to go into the nuclear model, into D.C. in a very small apartment. And she became really depressed. And so after about 5 years there, they end up having three children together. And the little boy gets hit by a car. And she just says, like, I won't raise my family here. So I loved the way the film showed the very personal, because it's really about this couple. But it also does show what happens to the larger network and how the civil rights movement affected it. Like you said, they you know, in the clip, it shows they're watching it on TV. And her friend just says in passing, you should write a letter to Bobby Kennedy. And so she did. And then he passed it on to the ACLU, who then passed it on to a lawyer right. who contacted them.
And really, the ACLU is the unsung hero in this film as well. You know, a group that apparently donations to the ACLU flooded after it was known that Trump was to be our new president. I'm so glad you brought up this issue of the tearing apart of families because of institutional racism, Stephanie. Today, our modern counterparts, before the Supreme Court ruled on gay marriage, our modern counterpart was same sex couples being unable to marry, even if they weren't being carted off to prison for living together, they were still unable to get the same effects. But then you have things like undocumented immigrants for whom deportation and the threat of deportation is literally tearing apart families. And you have parents separated from children, family members having been separated from one another under both Democratic and Republican presidents. And so it's a really sort of powerful symbolic film that that brings all of these issues to the fore. And I'm wondering also how important this story became during that very important struggle to legalize gay marriage. I know that during that time, a lot of folks were reminding us, you're upset about a man being able to marry a man or a woman being able to marry a woman. Not too long ago, white folks couldn't marry black folks. People couldn't marry outside their race. So this story was an important step in the fight for gay marriage, right?
Yeah, what I understand, it was actually referred to in the case. And the film, like I said, they really want to focus on the loving. But they do say at the very end, kind of the last line is like, the Supreme Court ruled that it's a human right to be able to marry. And so I feel like that was kind of a it's applied not, you know,
regardless
it's race or sexual orientation or whatever is happening, you know, like going back to this idea of human rights. And I'm glad you did talk about the unsung hero, the ACLU. What so there's two white, I think maybe Cohen is a Jewish lawyer who's really green. He's never really done this type of law at all, but he sees the case and he thinks it can go all the way to the Supreme Court. And he doesn't become the hero in this story. It's really quite amazing. They could have gone that way, but they actually don't even show what's happening in Supreme Court. I mean, you know what's going to happen in this movie because it's based on facts, but there's a tension of like, when, you know, is the KKK going to march? And they even had a brick thrown through their house window in real life, but they didn't show that in the film. They just showed a brick on Richard's car seat, on his car seat. One of his colleagues left it on his seat because he was a construction worker. So there's the constant threat of, you know, the white supremacy getting them. But in the end, you know, it ends up, she even says to a reporter, you know, I know we have a lot of enemies, but I think we have a lot of friends. Right. And Time Magazine ends up coming into their home and taking pictures, and that helped their case. But I do want to say that...
Which actually, I should say, you can see the photographs of the actual Lovings online if you look for them. Richard and Mildred Loving, I think it was Life magazine, these beautiful portraits of this couple. And you see them in real life. His arm is always around her, or he's looking at her in these photographs. And they capture that really beautifully in the film as well.
Yeah, it's actually surprising how much the real-life actors resemble them. And this case wasn't only a white-black case, which is how people usually frame it. It was white versus non-white, or as they describe in the film, colored. But the the wife, what is it?
Mildred.
Her name. Thank you. Mildred is actually not just Black. So she describes herself as white, Black, and Indian. And then on the marriage certificate, she's actually described as Indian. So in the film,
Indian as a Native American.
As Cherokee. And so later she described herself as Indian and Black. So, you know, it's really interesting. And actually on the marriage certificate, you can see it in the Smithsonian, it's online. They have the race because marriage certificates used to have race, right? So Richard's listed as white and Mildred as Indian on the marriage certificate. Now the marriage certificate plays a role in the film where they have it on the wall because he thinks that maybe they will be attacked. And so he has it there as assurance. And when they do come in, the police come in, they point to it like, we're married. And he goes, no, but that doesn't count here. But on the certificate, they've taken out that line. They don't have race on the on the certificate, which is just interesting. I think it's probably to simplify the story.
Right.
But yeah, as you talk about, like, you know, all of these present day things that are taking place, I think this film is a real testament of, like, not simplifying, but also simplifying, you know, because it can be that simple as to, like, love, and he tried to do that, but also showing the importance of political movement. Because without the civil rights movement, this happened in 67 that it was finally decided on. It would have never been voted this way. And it was a 9-0 vote. It was unanimous by the Supreme Court. And you know what? The couple decided not to go. And the lawyer said, you know, this is kind of a one in life chance. They only hear 1 in 400 cases. But Richard found out that the state of Virginia was going to argue that their children were bastards, that they viewed them as, you know, basically not human because they were mixed race. And he said, no, we're not going to go. Yeah. And so they stay home and they play in the field. And, you know, that speaks to what we opened with. It's like they were just average folk who wanted to live together. They didn't want to be a national hero.
Right. And, you know, I should say the entire family of five, the parents and the children, the youngest child, Peggy Loving, is still alive and has actually been involved in the making of the film. She met the director and gave her stamp of approval to the film, which is also really important when we make films about people, real people, right? To have that, you know, to have the descendants of those people or the family members who are alive be part of the process.
Yeah, I think he could have easily switched it and had lots of more dialogue because there was really room for, I mean, I would have liked to see a little more rage from the actors.
A little more rage, yeah, right.
And even from their family members, I mean, when they're taken off to jail, they just kind of watch them go. But I guess that was, you know, what I wasn't in their shoes. That's how they had to do it. And so it seems like they were, you know, he really tried to honor their story and depict them how they were.
Stephanie, I want to thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thanks, Sonali.
Stephanie Abraham is a writer and media critic, and we've been talking about the new film, Loving. She's also our pop culture correspondent and film critic. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can find our interviews online at risingupwithsonali.com and also subscribe to our podcast on iTunes.